Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a safe place for leading with your heart. Hey, thanks for being here. You, Me, Empathy is the official podcast of the Feely Human Collective, a collaborative mental health community designed to empower each of us to grow our capacity for empathy, vulnerability, and emotional wayfinding. Just a friendly reminder that this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. No one is just a silly boy with a feely heart. You can support the show by leaving a review in Apple Podcasts, following us on social media at Yumi Empathy and Feely Human, and joining the Feely Human Collective community at feelyhuman.co. And now your host, Noan Wells.
Hello, Feely Humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy. My name is Noan Wells. I am the creator and host of this podcast. I'm also the founder of the Feely Human Collective at feelyhuman.co. I am also the new proud pack member of Ripley, a four-month-old part pit, maybe part Great Dane. Oh my goodness, could be part Great Dane, part Beagle, maybe puppy that we just adopted. She's 4 months old. She's adorable. I am tired and my heart is brimming. So there you go. That's where I'm at. How are you? This is episode 215 on Feeling Connected in Community with Eric Zimmer. Eric was a guest on this podcast 4 years ago on episode 7. Yeah, episode 7. It's bonkers that I've been doing this long, and I'm grateful that Eric is here today to talk about how diagnosis can be both helpful and a limitation. What's changed for Eric in the 4 years since he's been on the podcast? Honing our spiritual habits and feeling connected in community. We dig deep into what community means for us, including building our communities, Feely Human, Eric's community in Spiritual Habits Program and the One You Feed podcast, what gets in the way of creating deeper community, bringing awareness to what community means for us, what safety looks like in community, how we fit into community, crafting community guidelines, etc. Really deep dive on community today. Really loved it. This chat with an old friend, Eric Zimmer, and I think you will love it as well. Before we get to the show, though, a couple of things. One is please leave a rating and review for the podcast in Apple Podcasts. It does help. I know I say it all the time. Maybe I'm a broken record. Maybe you just skip these intros, and that's fine too. But if you're listening to this and you haven't left a review, please do it. It helps out the show immensely. The other thing is this week is the next Feely Hikes this coming Sunday. We're doing it in LA. If you're in the SoCal area, would love to have you on a Feely Hikes. So you can learn more about that at feelyhuman.co. Click on the community tab. It's called Feely Hikes. So you can also email me, umiempathy@gmail.com, if you want to learn more about that. I think that's it. Let's get to the episode, shall we? This is episode 215 on Feeling Connected in Community with Eric Zimmer and puppies. Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, the official podcast of the Feely Human Collective. On this show, we explore the struggles, the triumphs, the brights and the darks we face as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly, without judgment, about our mental health, our neuroses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being feely humans. You, Me, Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, I'm thrilled to be back in Empathy Land, the feeliest place on earth, with award-winning podcaster, behavior coach, and creator of the new Spiritual Habits program. It's Eric Zimmer. Hello, Eric.
Hello. Nice to talk to you again.
Oh, my goodness. We were just reflecting off-air just before we hit record. You were on the show way back in episode 7, 4 years ago, which is a long time ago. It's been a long time. We've both been podcasting for a while.
A lot has changed since then.
Let's do an emotional check-in first, but I really want to dig into like what has changed for you in that time period. But let's kick it off with an emotional check-in. How are you feeling now?
I'm feeling content.
Okay. You took some pause there. I appreciate that. I like that. You're looking inward. What is contributing to this contented feeling?
Here I am taking another pause. I could list off a number of things that are happening externally that are going well, but I also know that that's not really the whole story. Mm-hmm. There are days that I feel more content than others for reasons I can't even begin to fathom some of the time.
Sure.
But I know that some things I know that are contributing. I had a lovely meditation this morning. I've been doing meaningful work with people I enjoy today. Our spiritual habits program that maybe we'll talk more about, but we've got sort of a second version of it, Circle of Connection. The first cohort of that wrapped up yesterday, and it was a beautiful, very heartfelt ending with lots of love. And so those are some of the reasons, I think. And amazing. Then, like I said, it's kind of who knows.
Kind of who knows. Yeah, I relate to that. As someone who has depression myself, there's definitely moments and days and hours and minutes there's just like I'm feeling this way, and it's just what it is. It's what is happening to me now.
Yes. I am a person who also I don't even know how I would phrase it. I have depression. I had depression. It comes, it goes. Mm. It's not really depression. It's just being human. Anyway, I'm not quite sure how to say that, but as somebody who has been around that terrain a lot, I totally understand what you're saying. And it's been a really interesting thing for me to reflect on is in what cases is it useful to use that depression as information? And in what cases is it useful just to go, that's kind of what happens sometimes. Like, let's not make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So to reflect on sort of my experience in that, I know that when I sort of announce it to myself, it could be a reminder of what I've gone through. It could be sort of a reminder of the resilience that I've had in previous depressive experiences, right? Or it could be, mm-hmm. it could also be a burden. It could be something that keeps me stuck, maybe potentially in a place of downward spiralness. How has that been for you?
As far as how I identify the depression?
Yeah, just help me unpack that statement you just said about how you identify it and define it for yourself.
Yeah, a little of what you said. It changes. You know, it's interesting. I'm reading an interesting book right now. It's a pre-release book, but it's called Six. I don't have the title right. A History of Six Misdiagnoses or whatever. And it's a woman talking about her mental illness journey, and you know, all the times that she got diagnosed. And I don't quite know where she's going to take it, but part of, but she has something in there, a paragraph or two that I relate a lot with, and I think is really interesting, which is that, and this is whether we're talking about mental illness or even certain physical illnesses, a diagnosis can be comforting, healing, empowering, relieving, and or it can be limiting. It can be, you know, restrictive. It can be burdensome. So I think some of it is how do we relate to, how do we relate to diagnosis? And, you know, do they help us to feel yeah, I think it's a very interesting question. In recovery circles, there's a lot of debate about should you label yourself as alcoholic.
Yeah. I think that's
I have different, you know, I don't know that I know the right answer. Actually, I think the right answer is there is no right answer. You should decide what works for you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's an interesting cognitive exercise, and it's one that I think should be explored for each of us, right?
Yeah,
because I do think the curiosity and the seeking toward more information is important, and sometimes at the end of that or as part of that journey comes a diagnosis, and diagnosis to me or has been in my perspective, more information. Okay, now I have this information. What do I do with it, right? How do I face this cognitively, emotionally? How do I relate to the world? Am I unpacking the part that's like, oh, I'm depressed, and is this gonna be the label? Is this gonna be the thing that I enter a room, I am depressed known, and that could be a limiting thing in and of itself. So yeah, it's interesting the labels that how those things can limit us, how those things can define us, how those things can empower us. I could do it. You said it yourself. Right. It could be and or for sure. It's interesting. So I saw, speaking of labels, I saw you post on Twitter just today that you're 15 years sober. Congratulations.
I am. Thank you.
It's amazing.
It is. I was sober about, I was sober 8 years, and then I went back out and drank again, and now I've been back again about 15 years. So I don't usually pay much attention to sober dates, but today I was like, 15 years, that feels okay. That feels significant.
Yeah. I mean, is it specifically because it's that number, or is today, you know, because you're feeling content and, you know, it's like, I'm going to honor myself today in this way.
I think a little of both.
Yeah. I love that.
I mean, I think 15 years, there's something about that number is like, well, boy, that's a long time.
It's great. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. And a little bit of like, I've been using social media a little differently lately. I don't actually use it. I generally don't use it very much. We use it for the show. We post some things. But lately, I've been a little bit more like on Twitter when I'm on there trying to actually like, I guess, do what you're supposed to do, which is be social. And as I've done that, I've thought, well, you know, part of being social is just sharing like kind of what's going on with me.
Yeah.
On a more personal level.
Yeah. Getting a little vulnerable.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I just reached my first year.
Oh, congratulations.
I guess it was January 5th. So, yeah. Oh,
that's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah. It felt good. And as someone who, and I know you can relate to this, as someone who's had sort of a long history of experiences with alcohol myself and starting very young, and then stopping and quitting and then coming back to it. This one feels very different and intentional. And I think it's connected to just my deepening self-awareness and growth as a human.
Yep.
It just feels like a natural byproduct. It feels great.
That's a great way to have it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one thing that's changed for me in 4 years. How about you? How what has changed? It's been 200 plus episodes of You Me Empathy. I don't know how many episodes of The One You Feed. You're a behavior coach now. You're doing a spiritual program. What else has changed for you personally, would you say?
Well, probably the biggest thing is, I think this has been less than 4 years ago, but I used to do the podcast while I also had a full-time job in the software business.
Right.
And so I left that job, and it's probably been 3.5 years, maybe. I'm terrible with time. For years, I had to ask a friend, what year did I get sober again? Anyway, it's been a while, and I've been doing the podcast, the coaching. I was doing coaching before I left the other job, but I've been doing that work full time. So that's been really rewarding. You know, it's been great to have that kind of happen. It was something I had dreamt of having happen, and we've been able to make it happen. I became a certified interfaith spiritual director in that time.
Whoa, what does that mean?
Well, spiritual director is a term that comes up out of all places, the Catholic Church. I'm not Catholic. But what they realized was that it was helpful to have someone in your life who was like maybe not your priest, you know, someone who was not in a position of quote unquote spiritual authority over you, but someone that you could have a regular, consistent conversation about your spiritual life and where it was going and what was happening and what questions were emerging for you. So it sort of came up out of that tradition, but then it got expanded to be the you know, part of the title I use was interfaith. So it means non-religious specific. So you know, learning to work with people of any and all or no traditions.
Got it.
But spiritual direction, broadly speaking, some people don't like that term. Some people use the term spiritual companion. But it's somebody who is walking the path with you. They might be a little bit further down the path than you, but just somebody who's there to listen. A lot of times it's referred to, and people may or may not resonate with this term, and you can substitute whatever you want for it. But I've heard it referred to as a couple's counselor between you and the divine.
Okay.
Would be the role I would be playing, right? I'm about you and connection, you know, the things that you want to connect to. How do you do that? So I became certified in that. And then I've also created this spiritual habits program, which now there's sort of a spiritual habits group program, first version. And then we've got a second intensive that people who have gone through the first program can go through called Circle of Connection. And those have been deep and great joys for me in creating them and then in seeing people go through them, mainly because I think one of the things that's interested me for a long time is how does the community of people who are listening get to know each other and support each other. And some of what we're doing in this program, I think, is causing that to happen. And so that makes me pretty happy.
That's lovely. Yeah. Yeah. Especially in the podcasting community, we, I think I mentioned off air that, you know, I speak and I know people are listening. I know people are downloading and, but I don't hear from them or whatever, right? And and there's not and the mechanism with which I hear from them is maybe a review or a rating or maybe a comment on social media, but the intentional fostering of community is something that I've been sort of working on in my own sort of spaces, and it's something we need.
We totally need. Yes, I think we need and we say we want, and yet my experience has been there's a lot of people who need it, say they want it, but then when presented with it, there's some reticence. Or maybe it's not even reticence. I think we are so busy. You know, I think we're so busy that sometimes it's hard to carve out time for creating deeper community. But I do think it is kind of pretty important.
I think I mean, I would argue that it's of the most importance in sort of healing and connecting. So you mentioned busyness or some reticence, you know, because we're busy. Like, what are some other things that you see in your space of the reasons that people aren't connecting deeper into community?
Well, busyness then spurs several other things, which is tiredness, right? Which often we then, when we're tired, we turn towards sort of the lowest common denominator way of relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the end of a long day and I could log on and have a discussion in this spiritual community, or I could turn on Netflix, and I just go with Netflix because it's easier. It's less, it takes less energy. It takes less risk. So I think there's that. So the busyness, also just the number of different ways we have to sort of distract ourselves, I think plays in also. I think for some people there is, I think the other piece would be in our more thoughtful moments, we think, I want community, I need community. But then as we just kind of go through the moments of our lives, we don't reconnect with that in a consistent enough way that we're aware that we want that.
And I would wonder also for you, is there a component of like even understanding what community is for myself or yourself, right? Like, what is community?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I've thought a lot about this topic. And what we know is that what we want is to feel connected to other people and to a group of people, right? I think that's ultimately what we're talking about. That doesn't happen right away. Right. So we know that the nature of it is it often, I mean, there are different studies out there. I've seen ones that say you need 80 to 100 hours of contact with a person to build a friendship as an adult. I think that number is sort of like saying, well, it takes 21 days to build a habit. Like, who knows? Like, there's a lot of factors that go into that. So don't take that number as an important number, but take it directionally, right? It speaks to the fact that it takes a while. So it's why we often feel closest with people we work with, because we get the requisite number of hours. So what happens is we go, okay, I want community. You know, I'd like to connect with people who share my values. You know, let's say they listen to your show and they're like, empathy is a deep value of mine. I'd like to connect with more people around empathy. So I show up, and what I feel is deeply uncomfortable most of the time. And I'm judging myself when I'm not judging myself, I'm judging the other people who were there. Right. And because that's what groups do, they bring that out in us. Right. And I do it a time or two and I don't feel really that connected. So I stop going. Versus realizing, like, of course, you don't. You're not going to for a little while, right? That building community or connection with people you don't know is a longer term endeavor. We have to do it and stay with it. Now, in a community like yours or mine, oftentimes you can build connection a little bit quicker because we are going deep very quickly. You know, it's not like you're going to have like 4 hours of small talk before you get into the heart of it, right? It's same thing with recovery type meetings, right? Community can be forged more quickly in a recovery type meeting because there is a depth, but it still takes some time usually. So I think that's the other thing, is that people try it and they go, well, this doesn't feel like what I thought it would feel like or what I want it to feel like. And they don't give it enough time.
Interesting. What about so the two things that I've noticed in creating spaces for my little company, Feely Human, one is what safety looks like and how do we define safety collectively? And then the other is the maybe individual obstacle of answering the question, do I deserve this space? Do I deserve this community? Have you run into that stuff? Like, do I deserve to be seen and heard?
Yeah, I think I do think that that is there. It's an interesting question because I think that gets a little bit to what I was saying earlier, which is we show up at these groups and we often end up in a, I'm either judging myself or judging the other people.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So I may be very aware that I don't feel like I deserve it. So I'm judging myself. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. Everything that comes out of my mouth is stupid. There's that. Yep. Or our defense mechanisms kick in and we go, they're stupid.
Yep.
Right. You know, our vulnerability is hard to do. And oftentimes, if you pay attention, you may notice you flip back and forth between those things, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. put me in a new situation and, you know, there'll be a little of that going on. I mean, I think it's some inbuilt human capacity to sort of say, like, where do I fit in this? I mean, I'm around other people and that's risky. Where do I fit? And so we can approach it with a certain degree of awareness where we're like, oh, I just sort of see it happening, you know, like, okay, let it play out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think there are questions of, you know, do I deserve this or am I good enough? It's funny. I mentioned this circle of, or the spiritual habit circle of connection. We just ran the first cohort through and it was 12 people. And we met together for 6 months in a small group. And I knew all these people by this point. They'd been either coaching clients of mine or they all had to have gone through the first spiritual house program. I know almost all of them at this point. And I think they're all amazing. And a good 75% of them expressed to me in one way or the other that they didn't think they were smart enough, spiritual enough, any number of different things to be included in this special group.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it was ironic to just look and go like, everybody's feeling that way. It's not like there's this in-group that's like, we're cool. And then there's like the person, I mean, like everybody is feeling, you know, so what we did was we just said, let's let this group dynamic do what group dynamics can be really good at is bring this stuff up and out in us and let's watch it. Because group dynamics are really powerful for those things if you approach them consciously. If you don't approach them consciously, they'll drive you very often right out of groups. Yep. But approached consciously, there are ways of much deeper growth and healing.
So approaching consciously, like as an example, can you give a couple of examples of like how you achieve that or how you facilitated that within your group?
Well, given that, you know, I had all these people say that to me, you know, we just talked about that in the beginning, right? We just
open,
you know, in the first session, like, yeah. Like I know that 75% of you at least, and probably 100% of you, I just haven't heard from the other 25% of you are feeling anxious about this. It's a first group. You don't know each other that well. You want to fit in. You want to be part of. You want connection, you want community. This is valuable to you. You've committed to this. You've paid money to come to this. You're going to feel these things. These things are going to come up inside you. That's natural and normal, you know? And can you, when you're feeling it, sometimes you can name it. You know, even if it's just like when you're about to make a comment and go, I'm feeling anxious about saying this right now. Because what you'll happen is you'll find a lot of the other people in the group nodding their head at you. And you'll go, oh, yeah, that's normal. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of how you do it. It's you really just, you talk about it and you try and encourage people to keep sharing it.
Yeah.
You know, that it's there, it's normal, it's natural, there's nothing wrong with you, and it's safe.
Yeah, you're not alone in it. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
I love that. So the safety piece, like how have you thought about that in terms of how you've approached building these groups? Have you defined it for yourself? Have you sort of come up with a list of things? Are you talking about it collectively in your group in terms of what safety means?
Yes and no. I think this might be an area that perhaps we could do better. So, I mean, we lay down some basic guidelines, you know, around like, you know, obviously what is said here stays here, you know, that we approach each other with a spirit of, you know, kindness and love, that we give each other benefit of the doubt, you know, mm-hmm. we assume positive intent. Mm-hmm. When we move towards judgment, we will work with ourselves and by talking to group leaders outside, if we need to, about how can I turn from judgment to curiosity about the other people. Mm-hmm. We are not doing, at least so far, none of this work has taken us deep into either, you know, into some particularly thorny topics, right? Like, yeah. I'm not trying to get people together to talk about race. Like, I think that would be a different, like, I would need to be way better trained than I am to do that. Yeah. Like, I think that there's the safety issues there are so complex and there's so many.
Yeah.
For these smaller groups, I've tended to talk to everybody before they come into the group. So I sort of know who's coming.
Yeah.
Now, for the bigger spiritual habits group, we don't have that opportunity. You know, there's too many people. There could be 60, 90, 100 people in it. But these smaller groups, you know, I kind of know who's coming. And so I am thinking about... so I don't know. I'd like to think people feel safe, but maybe that's an area we could do better. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I was just curious. I bring it up because it's been on my mind, not to challenge you, Eric.
No, I didn't take it as a challenge. I took it as a genuine like opportunity for me to reflect. Like,
yeah. No, I appreciate that.
Think about your question in a deeper way. No, I did not take it as a challenge in any way. So
good. Yeah, because it's like it's something that I've been thinking about. So I had this experience the other day. So I started doing this emotional check-in series where I get together with a group of folks online virtually. And I started like sort of brainstorming a list of things that for me, what feels safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my initial inclination was like, oh, I'll present this to the group and then we can edit it together and see what they think. But then I sort of made a last minute pivot and I abandoned that idea and said, I have my own sort of perspective on what mm-hmm. safe means. Let's first come up with what it means for each of you and what that means. And we all sort of collaborated and ideated in the moment on a list of things. And some of it, you know, assume positive intent was one of them. And there was a bunch of them, but it's just something that's been on my mind because mm-hmm. as I, you know, I mean, you're a podcaster. You're now leading groups. You're in a position of authority, right? As we like mm-hmm. deepen ourselves into these spaces, that can be toxic. That can take advantage of people. That can, I mean, we're in the space of mental health and deep humanity, right?
Yes.
You know, you want to be careful. You want to be mindful. You want to be present and always checking in on why you're doing the thing, right? So this stuff has just been on my mind constantly.
I everything you just said there, I deeply resonate with. You know, I have, as I said, 15 years sober, and before that I had 8 years sober. So I had a lot of years in groups.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a lot of men's therapy groups. I was in so I had a lot of years in groups where I really kind of watched and I went like, oh yeah, this is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Look at all this. And I've been like, oh, like that looks hurtful. I'm sure now with some of the lenses I have now, I would look back at some of the early AA things I saw and just be like, what is happening? How are we letting this go on? I was reflecting with a friend the other day, you know, in AA, we used to say all the time, like, you know, you would be somebody's sponsor. And if that person kept drinking, you would fire them, right? You would fire them.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that now and I'm like, that sounds completely insane to me. I'm going to fire a person who's trying to get better, even if they're not succeeding at it. Like, It just, again, some of the things that we did, that, you know, again, I got sober the first time in 1994 in Columbus, Ohio, right? Like it was a different world.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of experience with groups, but I also spend a lot of time doing what you're talking about, which is really deeply trying to reflect on why am I doing what am I'm doing and how am I doing it? And am I committed to doing the sort of deep inner work that other people are doing? You know, at all times, I have a spiritual director. I've got what I would consider a highly ethical business coach. And very often I'm working with a spiritual teacher. You know, I've worked with a Zen teacher for a couple of years. Not to say that all that puts me out of the realm of ever like being able to do things, but I feel like I try and remain as committed to my own growth and development as I am to other people's. Yeah. That feels important, you know?
It is. Yeah. Well, you're following your same, what you teach others, right? You're mm-hmm. being in sort of mirrored relationships with others and being in connection with others, right? We're creating groups, we're creating spaces where, or I'll just speak for me, I believe that we grow in connection with others and we need each other. Yes. That's the connection yes. we're talking about, right? Yes. And so if we're over here, just like, I'm on my own, I'm on an island, I'm up here, upper tier, yeah. whatever, like, that doesn't make any sense.
I had a really interesting conversation with my spiritual director about this. And the question was, because he was a minister for a lot of years. My question was, I'm creating this spiritual community is coalescing around the work that we do. I don't even want to say it's creating around me. It's creating around the work that we do. Mm-hmm. But by nature of the fact that I'm the one who stands up and does the teaching, I'm the one that does the podcast, I'm in a different position.
Yeah.
My question to him was, can that be my spiritual community, my Sangha, or do I need one in which I totally don't have any of that role? Mm-hmm. Do I need to have both these things? Because what I was finding was, it's really difficult to have time to do both those things.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we landed anywhere. His answer was, to him, he was able to say it could just be one thing because he really focused on, you know, equality and meeting people as equals and so for him, his answer was it could be one community. For me, I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah.
You know, do I need a separate community? And I think the answer to me is a little bit, I do. Not a totally separate community, but I do feel like I need a place where like I'm just one of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. There's, you know, there's something about that has been, you know, AA was great for that because even if you stood up and led a meeting or you were the secretary of the meeting, it was very clear, like we're all the same here. You're just fulfilling a role temporarily. So I do feel like that's pretty deep in my psyche. But yeah, I think these things, particularly the abuses you see happen in spiritual communities, like I just feel like I really want to keep my eye on the ball on this one.
Yeah. It's a really thoughtful question. And I think I am in the same realm in that I am coming to a place where I do want both. I feel like I do need the other as well, and I don't know what that is yet. Do you know what that is for you yet? Are you still figuring that out?
I know what it was for a while, and now I'm in a little bit of perhaps a transition, but I was just part of a Zen group. We met, now they met, they're based in Boulder, Colorado. But I sort of got involved just a little bit before the pandemic and all of a sudden everything went virtual. And I was like, oh, well, it doesn't matter that I live in Columbus, Ohio, and they live in Boulder. We're all practicing the exact same way. Mm-hmm. So it was really beneficial for me when things started to go a little bit back to normal. That's where I kind of went, well, now I'm feeling just a little on the outside. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like they're still offering virtual, but the rest of them are in a room together. And, you know, I just feel a little, so I'm sort of in transition right now where I feel like that community is a little bit more back in person, but not fully. I'm not entirely ready to commit to like full-time in person in a community in my area. Yeah. What I'm trying to make that community is I'm trying to build a small, like the business term would be mastermind, but that is not what I'm trying to build. But mm-hmm. I'm trying to build a small community of, and by small, I mean eight, something like that, of people that I know are deeply committed to their spiritual growth, but also might be in similar places in their life and career to me, and trying to sort of put that together because I want it to exist and I haven't found it. And so I'm like, well, I can create it. So I think that's the direction I'm headed right now with that. But we'll see.
We got an accountability group of sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even less accountability and more empathy, to use your, you know, just people where we can share like, yeah, this is what I'm going through. This is what it's like, you know? Oh yeah, I've been there. I know what that's like, you know?
It's the best. Yeah.
Totally.
My friend Katya and I recently, just a couple months ago, actually January, we started a little independent podcast meetup. Once we meet monthly, there's like 10 of us, people who have, they're all independent podcasters, some bigger than others. And we just show up and we talk about what's happening in our podcast world, what's exciting, what's hard, how can we help each other. It's been it's been great. It's something that I didn't realize I needed, and it's been wonderful.
That's great. Yeah, that's my realization. I think I really started realizing it last year, and now this year's the sort of commitment is like, yeah, I need more of that sort of thing. I have close friends, but my close friends live a very different sort of life than I do. That doesn't stop us from being friends, but to your point, like sometimes it's nice to talk to other people who are podcasting or who are, you know, building a business that looks like this, who are, you know, and again, I think accountability is good and helpful, but I need, you know, I'm doing it less from a, I need it to help grow my business perspective, and more of a, I need it to help grow my soul perspective. Like I personally need it. I've done okay on growing the business kind of, you know, off on my own. I don't mean that like without, I have had support, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. So in terms of growing your soul, what is like an area that you want to focus on in the near future? Like what is like something that's feeling purposeful and meaningful to attain or to reach for?
That is a great question. And I feel like I am wrestling with that question.
Yeah.
Like I said, I did a couple years of pretty intensive Zen study. Mm-hmm. I worked very closely with a teacher. Like I met with him three times a week. We were doing koan practice. It went very deep and it was very focused. And I've sort of drifted a little bit away from that. And I've been not quite sure where I want to drift to. And so part of me is like, I should just go back to what was working for me, you know, like, okay. However, my word of the year, like some people just pick a word for the year, which I find to be just a helpful orienting, you know, like it's simple, like this is what I'm about to do, orient towards my word of the year. My word of the year was love. So I've been very focused on the first month and a half of this year on deepening my metta practice. So, you know, metta being a practice in Buddhism of loving kindness, you know, of deepening my experience of feeling love. I think that we can think of love in a variety of different ways. It's kind of an all-purpose word that, you know, sort of like, you know, the igloos or the, you know, you hear the Eskimos have like 100 words for snow, right? Like we should have a lot of words for love. We don't. Yeah. I'm very good, broadly speaking, at the service definition of love, meaning I recognize that love often shows up through action. Mm-hmm. And that if I love people, I serve them, mm-hmm. right? I support them. I sacrifice for them. I've got that kind of down. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm perfect, but fairly decent in that way. What I realized I wanted a little bit more of was the felt experience of it. Hmm. You know, I'm always a little bit like, I don't want to orient too much around a felt experience of certain things, because I know that as a human, particularly a human like me, that's a pretty variable thing. It's why I anchor to love being like, it's an orientation that I try and do regardless of what I feel. That said, my practice is a little bit more on, can I deepen my felt sense of love? There's a lot of love around me. There's a lot of love that's directed towards me. There's a lot of love I have for others, but oftentimes I'm not connecting to it. And so that's kind of where I am right now. So, but I am wanting to say, like, reestablish myself in a particular spiritual path. What I found was the nature of my work is that every week, and now twice a week, I talk to somebody who's got some fascinating new program, new approach, new book, I would sit down and meditate and be like, I don't know what to do. Not like, I don't know how to meditate. It's like, which of these 30 things should I do?
Yeah.
And so it's very, I've discovered for my own growth, it's helpful to sort of like pick something and try and stay and go a little deeper. So I don't quite know where that's going to be next, but it's meta for the rest of February. And then, I may go back to the Zen group I was part of. I don't know. I don't want to float too long, untethered, and I do love the exploration, but I don't want to get stuck in the exploration. Yeah. That's just me. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being that way. I just have sort of noticed what tends to work for me is a certain degree of like, all right, this is where I'm going to be for this period of time. Try and deepen instead of broaden.
Mm-hmm. Do you relate to this at all? So I struggle, I think, and I'm learning this as someone who's in his early 40s now, with the sort of cognitive capacity. This is one side of things, the cognitive capacity for understanding and talking about spiritual concepts or feelings, emotional resilience and intelligence. That's one piece. And then there's the, maybe to use your words, the felt sense of it, the body piece, the, can I truly like, discern and describe the things that are happening within me versus the maybe it's the brain versus the heart piece. Like I think mm-hmm. I think I'm really good at the brain piece, and I could talk about it in droves. And then the other piece, the body piece, the felt, like I've been struggling with that piece. I'm working on that piece. Do you relate to that at all?
Totally. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think my spiritual practice, such as it is, has increasingly been embodied, has been a process of embodiment over the years. Like you, I'm naturally very comfortable in the, in the intellectual realm, talking about them as ideas. And I'm actually also, I think, pretty good at another stage in that, which I sort of referred to, which is like taking it into action. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not just talking about relating empathetically to people. Like, I actually think I generally do it most of the time. Yeah. I'm not just talking about being able to work cognitively with difficult emotions. I think I actually do it most of the time. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think the word depression comes in for me. Mm. Because my depression, the way I would largely describe it, is lack of feeling, not an excess of feeling. Right? My depression is largely not, I feel so sad. It's like, I don't feel anything.
Yeah.
And I have found that's a harder thing to work with, because other emotions, strong emotions, have an energy in them. There's a transformative energy that's right there, right at the surface. And you just got to figure out, like, how do I take that energy and point it a different direction? So strong emotion, I'm like, I'm pretty adept with. Nothing is a harder thing to work with. You're like, there's nothing here. Like, what do I do with nothing? You know? So for me, now I have found that on a deeper spiritual level, you can actually sort of start to tap into that a little bit. Like, there's also there can be a deep peace underlying that, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes, I do. I agree 100% with what you're saying. And I think for me, it is an embodiment piece, and it is a moving from conception, you know, to more direct knowing. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's why I liked the idea of Zen koan work, because a koan is, people describe them differently, and to say that this is what it is isn't quite right, but they're often described as like a riddle that's unsolvable. What is the sound of one hand clapping, right? You're not going to think your way to that. It's meant to sort of, after enough time, your brain just goes, all right, I give up. Like, and you're dropping somewhere deeper. And so that, I found that to be pretty beneficial work for me in that regard. But there are lots of other ways to do it. So yes, I am much more interested in practices that involve body. And I've actually been looking for, do I want to more actively take on a movement-based contemplative practice? Mm-hmm. So I've been investigating a couple different things in that direction also.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I one of my goals for this year is to find a dance class that would make sense for me. I enjoy moving my body. But I find that, and I've learned that, like, a lot of my history, I've, you know, 30 plus years of moving my body in a way that's, in some sense, to punish myself, in some sense, to like run away from things, or to numb things, or to ignore things sometimes. Not that that's always the case, but like a long history of just like abuse of my body, like, has led to this place. So I'm trying to be more aware of, like, be mindful when you run, you know, take it in, mm-hmm. you know, kind of feel your body. And I'm getting better at it. And I thought,
yeah,
why not a dance class? That'd be fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Zen group I was part of, my teacher's wife did something, and she just called it free movement. Mm. And it basically, I mean, the first time or so I did it, I was like, I don't understand at all what we're doing here, because it was literally like, okay, we're all here. Now I'm going to put on some music, move in whatever way you want. And I was like, how is this even a class? Like, shouldn't you be teaching me something, or telling me what to do, or, you know?
Sure, sure.
But it was fun. There was something to it, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely, I think, yeah, dance for me is something I find very interesting, because I am not quote unquote good at it. So if you took me to like, I tried for, you know, multiple times, like, I'm going to go to ballroom dancing. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it would be fun. I'm terrible at it. Yeah. Like, and it just becomes frustrating for me. So that's not what I need. And yet I recognize, like, moving to the music is a lovely thing to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So the other practice I discovered a couple years ago that sometimes I do is called shaking. Hmm. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It is literally, you sort of just start sort of moving your body in sort of a shaking type way. It's often considered good for moving energy through that is stuck or stagnant. There are certain trauma therapies that use it, but it looks very strange, but it feels really nice.
Yeah.
So You could YouTube shaking, and I think you'd find something, and it's kind of an interesting, nice. Interesting thing.
Now, when you say you're going to potentially explore some more embodiment practices, is that yoga for you? Is that other things? Like, what does that look like for you? Do you think?
I don't think it'll be yoga because I've done and do yoga, and I do think it's actually, it's helpful, but it's strenuous enough mm-hmm. that I think it pulls me out of the contemplative part. Now, yeah. That's not to say I think with the right teacher, I might actually really be able to get it, but doing it on my own or doing it in like a group yoga class, I feel like I can't quite find that right spot. So I was thinking more something like maybe Tai Chi. Or there's other things related that are in the Tai Chi area that are sort of also Zen related a little bit. So something kind of in that sort of area. Although I've done Tai Chi a little bit, and I can't say that like my initial experience of it was like, wow, you know, like it was kind of like, well, that wasn't, you know, like, okay, fine. I mean, but sort of like we talked about earlier with like building community, I feel like I would need to give it an earnest go.
Yeah.
But I do feel like maybe, you know, a movement-based practice I've had an inner feeling that is something I should explore. You know, mm-hmm. I can't always trust all, you know, any inner feeling. I'm not like, oh, but sometimes if something keeps sort of coming to me, I'm like, okay, I think there's something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also like, and I wonder, I think you said just a moment ago, you trying out ballroom dancing and you sort of like getting frustrated because you were not getting it or whatever. I think what I like about, because I'm not quote unquote good at dancing either, Eric, to be very clear. Like I think I move well because I played soccer for 30 years, but outside of that, I don't think I have much rhythm. But what I like about the idea of it is it potentially could get me out of my head and get out of the limiting belief sort of framework, get out of the people are going to make fun of you, get out of the you look silly, whatever mindset, and just try to be in my body and refute of those things.
100%. And I think that is certainly possible with any type of dancing. And I just know for me that for whatever reason, like that sort of dancing that requires you to do particular steps in a certain way puts me firmly in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying I couldn't get past it. But it's not the easiest route in for me. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So as you've grown and deepened into yourself and have done wonderful work in the world and your podcast, and now you're leading groups and stuff, like how has that impacted or affected your personal relationships and your relationship? I think you're a dad. Yeah.
I'm a dad. Yep. Yep. My son is 23. So, you know, I wish that I had been as involved in my personal development for all of his life as I was from sort of 15 on from him. I was very early on for him when I was in sobriety. And then I went through a number of years where, you know, I wasn't my best self. I wasn't my worst self. But I think that I was lucky enough 6 years ago, I met a partner and I was convinced that like, I had this belief that I had pretty much figured out most of life relatively well. I was like, well, you know, relatively successful career wise. And I didn't love my work as much as I love what I'm doing now, but I found it interesting. And it was pretty good work. And I had good friendships and I had lots of interests. And I felt like, yeah, I kind of figured a lot of things out. But the thing I'll never figure out is intimate relationships. Like, I'm broken. Okay. And, but I've been in a relationship now for 6 years, and it has just been, it's been amazing. It has just been 6 years of amazing. And I don't mean like 6 years of, like, you know, honeymoon period. I just mean 6 years of intimacy and closeness and trust and things that I just didn't think I was capable of. And I think a combination of the growth I'd done up to that point and finding somebody that was the right person for me, like, it's just, it has clicked. So in that regard, I don't know, you know, how much the podcast has, or the work I've done, has helped that. But I do think, you know, I'm 50, how old am I? 51. I got into sobriety the first time at 24. So what's that, 26 years? I had a detour where I drank again for 4 or 5 years, but we're looking at 20 plus years of being pretty focused on my internal growth. I feel like that has paid a large number of dividends in my life. So I feel like my relationships are all really good. I would like to have a few more close friendships in the, like, Columbus, Ohio area. I've got several really good friends there, and I've got a bunch of friends scattered all over the place. So I think I might, you know, I think I could do for another person or two in that area. But my relationships feel really, really good. And I think all the work I've done and being able to do the podcast and being able to do the coaching, I just feel like I'm right where I should be, want to be. You know, I feel I'm in a, back to where I started. I'm in a pretty content place, you know. I certainly have a mind that's capable of forming discontent out of any situation. I mean, there is a tendency that way towards me. And I think maybe the human condition in general, but I feel very comfortable, confident, and kind of at home in life right now.
I'm happy to hear that. And you hear that, listeners, Eric is open for friendship applications.
If you live in Columbus, Ohio.
If you live in Columbus, Ohio. one of my bosses actually lives in, my day job lives in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, yeah? Is it somebody, I'm not going to ask you to comment on your boss on air. There's
some... he's a wonderful human, and he's also expecting, his wife is expecting a second child, so very busy, probably.
Yeah,
probably not good.
Not the great candidate. Fit. No. I'm looking for people who are, Yeah.
Well, so you have this spiritual habits program. I know that you said you just closed that loop, and then you said you have something else coming up as an extension of that.
Yeah. So actually, we just closed the extension of it. We are getting ready to ramp up the next version of the Spiritual Habits group program. So it's sort of the first version.
Okay.
And it's, you know, Spiritual Habits is basically, what I did is I sort of looked at, like, where am I most interested? Where do I keep sort of getting called towards? And I realized it was in two things. One was sort of like foundational spiritual principles, things that show up in all traditions, you know, sort of the perennial wisdom, right? You know, the things that we'd all agree with, like being more present is good, you know, being more accepting is good, being more generous is good. Some of these very foundational principles. So I was like, all right, those have been very important to me, and I'm really oriented towards them. And then the other thing that really has been important to me through my life is behavior change. How do people actually change? Whether it be getting rid of an addiction, whether it be building an exercise habit, whether it be not procrastinating. Like, I've learned a lot about that. I've interviewed all the world's leaders in that place. And so I thought, what happens if you just put those two together? What might that look like? Because I think what, for most of us, we have spiritual, or even you could even call them philosophical or psychological beliefs. We have, like, these are the ways, if I lived according to these sort of ideas or things, my life would be better. But then we forget. We just get busy and we forget. Maybe if we figured out how to have a morning meditation practice, which we certainly work on in the Spiritual Habits program. Some people have one, some people don't. But even if you've gotten to that point where you're like, I meditate 20 minutes every morning, which I think is great, you've still got all the rest of the day. So the Spiritual Habits is like, all right, here's some foundational principles. Here's some behavior change science. Let's marry them together. And how can you live these things more deeply? Mm. So the big group will be open. And again, that group could be anywhere from 40 to 100 people. But we do a really cool thing where we take that big group and we divide it into small groups. So 5 to 7 people that are sort of in your time zone. And those groups meet on Wednesday nights. The main group meets on Sunday. But what's been really rewarding for me out of that is some of those groups are still, you know, they continue meeting after the program is over. There's one group from the first Spiritual Habits program, which has been like 3 years. They've been meeting every week for 3 years, and they are all going to meet up in New Mexico in a couple months. And wow, so it's cool. Some of that sort of stuff is really wonderful. So I think I'm really proud of the program, and we will be, we'll be opening enrollment for it sometime in the next, 10 days. I think we've got a webinar. This is where if anybody who advises me on marketing would be like, dude, you have got to stick the landing on this. Like, I'm supposed to say we have a webinar coming up on February 27th. So
there you go.
We do. And you can learn about one spiritual habit that you can use to have more ease in your life. And there'll be a webinar, and then the program will open up for enrollment after that. And all the details are at spiritualhabits.net.
Amazing. That's exciting.
It is. I think this might be cohort number 5. I love doing it. It is. I'm really proud of the program, and I've seen, you know, so many good things happen. And then, yes, there is a program that comes after this one for people who really like it and want to go deeper. But the first one is spiritualhabits.net.
Very cool. And this is a weird technical question. How do you facilitate it from like a platform perspective? Mm-hmm.
In a pretty straight, non fancy way, we use Zoom.
Okay.
We use Zoom. I augment it with a couple of things. I mean, we use Zoom breakout rooms a lot, yeah, which is a really pretty. Every time I do it, I'm like, I feel like I'm invoking some kind of sorcerer's magic to make it happen. And then we use this platform called Slido, which allows us to sort of take like online surveys so we can see each other's results. Yeah. We've got a community platform called Circle where people can meet between sessions and all that. But we keep it pretty simple. Yeah. Like, you know, we in the beginning, I started earlier, we played with Slack and we played with a variety of different things. And I realized like that was great for a certain contingent, but another contingent got lost by it. Mm-hmm. So we've tried to really say, how do we keep the technology part of this as simple as we can? You know, texts, Zoom, emails, Slack is about, or not Slack, the Circle program, which if you can use a web browser, you can use Circle. So we've tried deliberately not to get too fancy because we've got people of all ages. You know, I've got, you know, several people in the group last time who were, you know, 75 plus. Mm-hmm. So, and not all of them are this way, but some of them are technically challenged. So we try and keep it simple.
Yeah. I love that. And I know Circle well, because in my day job, we run, we have a private paid community called SPI Pro, where we, you know, a bunch of online business folks are in there and whatnot. But yeah, Circle's great.
What's your day job again?
I work with SPI Media, a guy named Pat Flynn. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I started working, well, it started off as like we were an editorial agency doing writing, editing, and things like that. And then Pat was one of our biggest clients. And then maybe 4 years ago, we combined teams and now we're Pat's team.
Oh, well, yeah. That sounds like pretty great work.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
It's wonderful people. They treat us wonderfully. We're helping a lot of people create really interesting businesses and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not my heart. It's not my passion. Mm-hmm. And they know that. Mm-hmm. So if they listen to this, hi, whoever's listening to this on my SPI team, you know this about me. You know Feely yes. Human is my passion.
Feely Human is his passion, and yet he delivers high quality work day in and day out.
Darn tootin', I do. Darn tootin'. I love that. Well, and you said it's spiritualhabits.net is where .net. Folks can go.
Yep.
Great.
Yep.
Great. Well, Eric, let's talk about empathy heroes. We always wrap up the show talking about folks in our lives who are empathetic, compassionate. They could even be characters from stories we love. I will go first to give you a moment to reflect on your empathy hero. My empathy heroes this week are, so you mentioned Netflix earlier. I'm calling myself out for watching Netflix. My partner, Jessica, and I have been, we just finished the first season of this show called Cheer. And it's about these cheerleaders from this college called Navarro College in Texas, a small Texas town. And it's remarkable what these kids can do. Just remarkable. It's stunning. And what is most fascinating about the show is that the team is composed of folks from every walk of life and hard backgrounds and poverty and trauma and child abuse and all these things. And to see them come together and to connect with each other over this shared passion, talk about sort of fostering community and safety. It's really beautiful and stunning to watch. And I was very, very inspired by watching the show. And if you listening have not watched Cheer, or Eric yourself, if you haven't watched Cheer.
I've seen it. It is amazing.
Isn't it amazing?
It's great. Yeah, it's a really well done, really well done program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's great. So that's on Netflix for those listening, and it's called Cheer, and they're my empathy heroes. How about you?
Well, you've got me thinking, because I'm trying to think. I'm so terrible at remembering what I watched, but we watched something recently. I just choke up in about anything I watch. So I'm trying to think of what it was recently that caused me to do that, because it's almost always kindness on screen that causes me to do it. So I'm trying to remember what it was. We watched this show called Schitt's Creek.
Oh my God. So good.
Good. It's so funny, because the first several episodes of it, I did not like it. Uh-huh. And we stopped watching it.
Yep.
But I just kept hearing how good it was. We went back again. And I realized there was a point that it turned. And I can't pinpoint the exact episode. But it was a point where one of the characters did something really kind for another one. Mm. And I was like, oh, they're not just these awful, shallow people. Is there an empathy hero in there? Is there an empathy hero in Schitt's Creek? What do you think?
I mean, I would say, I mean, I guess the whole family. I mean,
they have their moments of being empathetic and then being completely clueless.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll meet you halfway, because I'm the same way, Eric. Like, I watched the first couple of episodes and I was like, okay, like, this is fine. You know, it is, and there's so much better TV out there. And then I gave it a second shot, and then I was hooked. And I think it's what is wonderful about the show. It's surprising. Like, it will, those moments of kindness will show up and they'll be unexpected.
Yes.
Whereas like a traditional show will be very typically, it'll be a setup for a joke, or it'll be saccharine in some way, and the way that it's done is so, like, it feels so heartfelt.
Yep. So my empathy hero is going to be I'm gonna cheat here, and this I don't want I this I, I'm just gonna say what came to mind, which was this last Circle of Connection group that I mentioned, it just finished yesterday.
Yeah.
And the way we wrapped up was, I assigned everybody in the group another person beforehand. And I said, I want you to come and I want you to say one way that person has impacted you during this program and one hope you have for that person moving forward. And it was just incredible. I mean, lots of people, you know, crying at what the other people were saying about them, you know, just so many people being seen. Mm-hmm. So can I just say all of them? Is that cheating?
No, it's not cheating at all. I think that's a wonderful.
Jane and Joanne and Chris, and I could go on, but yeah, it was really, it, you know, you launch these things and you don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
We've launched things that just didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, I launched this sort of second part of Spiritual Habits Circle of Connection because I had had the experience of being part of small groups that met for a long time, and I just had found them transformational. I was like, can I recreate that? And it was just really rewarding yesterday to sort of see that, because during it there are moments where I'm like, we're not getting it, like something's not, you know, like. And, but just to sort of see it at the end there, all the ways that people appreciated each other and appreciated, like, it was just, there was a lot of love in that, that little group, and it was nice.
I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah. So grateful to hear that. Well, Eric, in addition to spiritualhabits.net, where can folks connect with you?
OneYouFeed.net. I guess it must be all about the .nets. OneYouFeed.net. Which means the .coms are, they're all gone.
One, you didn't go for .pizza?
Well, you know, now I think it's hot to have like .xyz. That seems to be kind of a big one these days.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But we're still rolling with the second class from 19, 97.net.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. It's great. Well, that's
not quite classic, but you know, anyway.
Nah, it works.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, listeners, all those links will be in the show notes at feelyhuman.co.
Yeah. Fancy. That is cool.
Just wanted to thank Eric again for being on the show 4 years later. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back on, and congratulations on doing it for 4 years. That is it's a lot of podcasts out there that get nowhere near that. So congratulations.
I appreciate that. And to you listeners, as I always say, I'm here, you're here. We're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring pale blue dot. We have each other. It's you, me, empathy.